Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Perek Chet, the very last chapter of Shir HaShirim. Now, since this is our last Perek, I want to review and give a little structure to what we've done so far. So in Perek Aleph, where we began, we met the Raya, a shepherd, a vineyard tender who was longing for the Dod, and he was quieter and more distant. We didn't really hear his voice yet, very briefly, but she spoke about her intense desire for him. In Perek Bet, we hear him more. He came for her, and ultimately, you know, he stood outside her doorstep, but ultimately she sent him away, telling him to be like a gazelle. You know, he was jumping like a gazelle through the hills, and she told him to leave. In Perek Gimel, she regrets sending him away, although she did send him away because she thought the love wasn't mature yet, or because of other obstacles, she regrets it. She searches for him and she finds him, they reconnect, and ultimately their love peaks in Perek Dalid, where we hear a description of even a wedding between the two of them. In Perek Hay, really Pasuk Bet, we come to the crisis. He comes to her. He's knocking on her door. This is following Perek Dalid, where they were at their peak. And she just doesn't get out of bed. She doesn't want to get her feet dirty. And he leaves. She regrets this and then searches for him through the night, but ultimately she doesn't find him. Then in Prakim 6, 7, their love builds. They continue to search for each other. They describe each other. And there's a real mutuality in the way that they speak to each other. Their relationship seems to mature. And now we're up to the last Perek, Perek Chet, and we're ready. If we follow the same pattern that we got, that we went through so far, in Aleph through Dalid, where she longed for him, he came, she sends him away, then their loves builds, and ultimately they reconcile. So we kind of expect the same pattern again in Hey, Vav, and Zion, and Chet. And once again, he's left, they search for each other, they talk about their love, they build up the intensity. And in Perek Chet, we're ready. We're expecting them to come together. And not only come together, but they'll be stronger because they've gone through hard times, they've been through obstacles in their relationships, but now they'll come out on the other side. But quite unfortunately, and here's a little bit of a spoiler alert, if you haven't read Perek Chet yet, this is not how the story ends. And in the very last pasuk, the last verse of the entire Sefer, the Raya sends her beloved Dod away. And what is going on here? Like, why, how does it end that way? I mean, really, we're just waiting. We've been through a lot together with the Dod and the Raya. What we're really hoping for is to see them together. So that's what we're going to explore today. But before we get to that, I want to give you a little bit of the structure of Perek Chet and also show the progression of, from where we began, because I actually think there is a lot of progress in Perek Chet. So we'll highlight that first. So, okay, the Perek starts with really strong words of desire of the Raya for the Dod. And that's where we realize that he's not coming. Like it ends, at the end of Zion, we expect them to reunite. But what happens next is she talks about her longing for him. And she ends in a way that we're very familiar with in Pasuk Dalet, Hishbati etchem benot Yerushalayim, mata iru umata oru et ahava ad shetechpots. Right? Don't wake me up. Let my love continue to blossom. But it's still her words of desire for him, and he hasn't, it's not the two of them together, which is what we expected. Then, following this, we have more very strong words, again, by the Raya, and she makes some very strong words about, really speaking about not only their love in particular, but love in general. She says, love is as fierce as death. She says, no amount of water can drown out love. Even if somebody pays all the money in the world, right, for love, people would laugh him off because they know that you can't, famous, a phrase that we're all familiar with, you can't buy love. Okay, so after her statements about love, then we go to a totally different section. This Perek, I will say, is like there's a lot going on. In a way, it feels disjointed. There are so many different pieces. So we had the longing, then we had her statements about love, and then we come into a different conversation, which kind of flashes us back to Perek Aleph, where she was in conflict with her brothers. And now, once again, we hear from her brothers. And they say, this is Pasuk Chet, Achot lanu kitana v'shadayim ein la. Man asel achotenu biyom shedubar bo. So we have this younger sister, but she's not developed. She doesn't yet have breasts. And what will we do for our sister on the day that someone comes to speak for her, to speak for her hand in marriage? Almost like they think, first of all, that she's young and she's not developed. And they also think that maybe no one's going to ask for her hand. In Pasuk Tet, we hear there are different possibilities. Im chomahi, if she's a wall, now these are all very metaphoric, but if she's a wall, nivne alah tirat kesef, so then we would build on it like a silver tower, a silver battlement. Im delahi, if she's like a door, which would have been like made with metal, natsur alah luach eres, we'll panel it in cedar. So it sounds like they're suggesting, I mean, the exact meaning of these metaphors is very obscure, but they're suggesting something like, you know, we need to make her more marriageable when the time comes, when she grows up. So we would almost like add like external factors, you know, add more money, add more beauty. But then she steps in Pasuk Yud, and she kind of fights back to the brothers. And she says, no, ani choma v'shadai kemigdalot. Right? I am a wall, or if I am a wall, they're the ones who compared her to a wall. Then you think you have to build on my wall, but I already have things built on my wall because I am developed. I do have breasts, and they're like towers. V'az hayiti be'enav kimotzeit shalom. So you think that I don't have anybody, but actually I already have somebody. I have the dod, and finding him is like finding, it's like finding shalom. It's like finding peace. I have already found peace by being together with the dod. And I want to just notice in this statement, it's a strange conversation. Again, like I said, these different pieces don't feel always so that they flow so naturally together. But I think there's a lot of progression here. Because if you remember, in Perek Aleph, she talked about, she was saying to the Dod, or to the Benot Yushalayim, to her peers, actually, she was saying, you know, I don't appear like I'm beautiful. You might look at me and judge me and think that I'm not worthy, but really it's not my fault. My brothers are the ones who made me take care of their vineyard. So karmi shali lo notarti, I was never able to really take care of my vineyard. And we understood that as like, I wasn't able to take care of myself. So we saw in Perek Aleph a lack of confidence, you know, like thinking about how everybody else is judging her, and B, a sense of that because of her interactions with her brothers and what the brothers are making her do, how they're perceiving her, she herself is not able to take care of herself. Here in Perek Aleph, there's much more of assertion of her own independence. They view her as too young. They view her as undeveloped. They view her as someone who needs to be beautified and built up. And she responds to them and says, oh no, I am ready. I am full. I am developed. I don't need anything. And I have already found love. And in my love, I have found peace. So it's just like one example here where I think you could see the development of the Raya as a person, as a personality, as a character. You feel her self-confidence, A, in herself, and B, in her relationship. Okay, next section in Yud Aleph through Yud Bet, we have another sort of strange, you know, non sequitur, but let's talk about it. She starts talking about, we have a piece that talks about Shlomo, which is not, you know, we started with Shir Ashirim, Asher LeShlomo, that this is the Song of Songs that was written by Shlomo. And we also have other references to Shlomo in the story. Now, Kerem Haya LeShlomo. Shlomo had a vineyard, Biva'al Hamon, in a place called Baal Hamon, which we don't know what that place is. Certainly Baal Hamon, the word Hamon, gives us a sense of that it's something that's of having a lot, you know, somebody who has everything. And then what happened to Shlomo? Natanata Kerem Linotrim. He gave his vineyard to the guards. Ish Yavo Bepirio Elef Kesef. and the guards probably took care of the vineyard, and people would pay for the fruit of this vineyard. It was so majestic. It was so, you know, it was such a special vineyard that people would come and pay 1,000 pieces of silver to take a fruit from this vineyard. But then she responds almost, and she says, Karmisha li lifanai, my vineyard is before me. Ha'elef lecha Shlomo, umatayim lenotrim et perio. So she says, I have my own vineyard. And Shlomo, you know what? Yes, she mentioned that it was 1,000 pieces of silver for each piece of fruit in Shlomo's vineyard. But she says, no, Shlomo, you know what? You take the 1,000, you know, and you pay your guards. I have my own kerem, and that's what's important to me. And I think here also we see a certain sense of growth. Certainly in the beginning, we saw an intimidation. There seemed to be a kind of mismatch, an inequality between the dod and the raya. She portrayed him as a king. She portrayed him as someone who was surrounded by guards on a majestic bed. And she often portrayed herself as a more simple person. Maybe they weren't from the same socioeconomic background. And she saw an imbalance between the two of them, and there was an intimidation. But here, perhaps what she's saying is, you know, yes, you know, I might think that, you know, in the past, I thought that it was all about the stature and the money, and that was separating us, or I couldn't, you know, I couldn't elevate myself because of who I am and where I come from. But now she realizes that, you know what, all the stature and the money in the world, that doesn't really mean anything. As she even said in the section before, money doesn't buy love. She recognizes the worth in herself. Karmisha li lifanai, my kerem is before me. And kerem, the vineyard, has symbolized before herself, her own dignity. And also perhaps we've always used these images of gardens and vineyards and natural growing things for their love. So here what she's saying is, what I have before me, myself, my relationship with the dod, that's the most important to me. All the external things, it doesn't matter to me. And actually what she kind of realizes here is that, you know, Shlomo may have many beautiful fruits in his vineyard, but because he has so many, he can't actually tend to them. He can't actually appreciate them. But me, Karmisha Li, my vineyard, I'm able to appreciate. And the Elef, again, also may be a reference to Shlomo, we know, is said to have had 1,000 wives. Maybe what she's saying is if, you know, her dod is Shlomo, or metaphorically is, you know, like Shlomo, she's saying, yes, you know, maybe 1,000 wives, you know, you might have 1,000 wives, but what's special is me, and what's special is our relationship. Okay, so all this sounds like very positive developments, but then we get to the end. And in the last two psukim of the Sefer, we have a turn. So in Yud Gimel, he says to her, the dod says to the raya, Hayoshevet baganim, you who is sitting in the garden. And we know that garden before has symbolized their love, their place of love. It was in Perek Dalet, you know, such a powerful, you know, allusion to herself and their love. And now he says to her, you who sits in the gardens, Chavirim mivakshim lekolech, Chavirim mivakshim lekolech hashmieni. So my friends, you know, are listening. We're all listening. Let's hear your voice. We want to hear your beautiful voice. And then instead of saying, here I am, come to me, and then we would end with a beautiful, happy ending, instead she says, Barach dodi, run away, my beloved. Udemei lecha litzvi ola ofer ayalim. Be as fast as a gazelle or a young stag. Al harei besamim. Run away to the hills of spices. And that's it. That's where the Sefer ends. And it's a problematic ending, I would say, first of all, on the relationship level, right? Where the whole time we're kind of waiting for the two of them to be together as their love matures, as they realize different things, as they appreciate themselves, as they appreciate each other. And here, she's sending him away. It's like, you know, it's like not the end of the love story that we were hoping for. But I would say it's even more problematic on the allegorical level, because if the dough represents Hashem and the raya represents us, then how could our sefer end with us sending away Hashem and saying, Hashem, run away, be like a gazelle running through the hills? Like, what? Why would us sending away Hashem be the very last pasuk of this beautiful sefer? So it's not surprising that many of the Parshanim, specifically also, it's not just specific, the medieval Parshanim, modern Parshanim, reinterpret this last pasuk. So, for example, Rashi says, when she says, brach dodi, run away, my beloved, she says, run away. What she actually means, Rashi actually adds in, run away and take me with you. When she told him to run away, she didn't mean run away and, we'll be separated. No, she meant run away and I'm going to come with you. Rashi thinks it alludes to Bnei Israel and the Galut. So as opposed to it being a runaway, it was, no, I'm coming. Like, it's run away, but we're going to be together. Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, actually has a very creative approach. He says, why, in the pasuk before, if you remember, he said to her, I'm here in the garden with my friends, and we want to hear your voice. We want to hear your beautiful voice. And then she answers, and she says, brach dodi, right, run away, be like a tzvi, and run through Harei Besamim, the mountains of incense and spices. And then Rashbam adds, run away, and then I'm also going to follow you, because I don't want to be with you and your friends. You know, you're here with this whole group of people. No, I want us to be more intimate together. I want it to be just the two of us. So when she said, run away, Rashbam understands that as go away to a private place, and then I will be able to join you there. And instead of it being a big group, it's going to be just the two of us. So instead of it being her sending him away, it's actually her saying, I want more. I don't want to just be with you and your friends. I want the two of us to be together and it to be just us. So Rashbam reinterprets the pasuk to say that we end on a high note, because we end on the note of the raya saying to the dod, I want a personal relationship with you. I want a special intimacy, which would also fit into what we were saying before about when she speaks about her own kerem as opposed to Shlomo HaMelech, who has many kremi, many wives, right? If, like, she might be saying, I want a relationship that's exclusively with you. It's a desire to build a personal relationship. And certainly this resonates on the allegorical level where, as first of all, as Klal Yisrael, as Bnei Yisrael, we may be saying to Hashem, we want to have that special segula relationship with you, the special significant relationship with you. And I think maybe even more so on a personal level, right? Like, each person, we turn to Hashem and we say, Hashem, I want it to be just me and you. I want to feel like my relationship with you is unique. And Hashem, you specifically care about me, right? You look at my life and you know what's happening and you answer me and we communicate, and that's what I want. I want the personal. And that would be a beautiful level where we would end and say, we actually want more. But it is a difficult read, because brach, like run away, it seems negative, right? It doesn't seem like run away together. It's not like let's go and elope. It sounds like she really is sending him away, and it requires really a rereading of the literal sense of the pasuk. And interestingly, that like in some Sfardim or Sfardic shuls, when they read Shir Shirim before every Shabbos, what they do is they read the last pasuk, and then they go back to the pasuk before. So they read brach dodiu demelech haletzvi, right? Like run away. And then they go back to pasuk yugimel, and they say, ah, hayoshevet baganim chavirim makshivim lekolei chashmieni. So they read the pasuk before where the dod says, oh, you were in the garden, we're all listening, let's hear your voice. Now, why do they go back to the pasuk before? That's a minhag that we have. We do that in other megillot also, like Eicha, because we don't want to end with a negative pasuk. We don't want to end with the raya sending the dod away. So we go back and we read the pasuk before that. But that would certainly go against kind of this reframing that we saw in Rashi and Rashbam. So let's propose here another read, which is why, you know, how can we read Barach Dodi, her sending him away, and see that as a possible ending to Shir HaShirim and an appropriate ending to Shir HaShirim. So maybe that is, though, like, meaning why these happy endings that tie everything up with a bow, why did they not work? Because they're very often not true to life. And they're also not true to love. The nature of love is something that is very difficult to be satisfied. The nature of love is that we're always searching, we're always growing. It's never fully satisfied. Even, you know, first of all, on a, I would say, on a human level, and also meaning when two people really love each other, they're always trying to get to know each other better, always trying to do more. The nature of love is that it's not at all, it doesn't ever end up getting wrapped up with a bow. And certainly in our relationship with Hashem, we are always searching for more. It doesn't end all wrapped up with us together. It ends with, you know, things moving around, moving pieces, with thinking about how things could be better. And there's no ending to this story. It's ongoing. And there's a beautiful piece that Rav Yehuda Shaviv wrote about this perek. And he said, you know, it is not the first time that the Raya has sent away the Dod. She has sent him away before. But last time when she sent him away, and that was in Perek Bet, in chapter 2, when he came to her outside her house and she sent him away, she sent him away. He turns out, he says, she sends him away and she sends him to Hare Bater. Now, the mountains of Bater. And Bater has a sense of it means separation, it means cutting off. And in this case, when she sends him away and she tells him to go, she tells him to go to Hare Besamim, to the mountains of spices. And spices and scent has always been a significant sense, I guess, in this sefer, and it symbolizes the beauty of their love. So what he points out is maybe this time, the first time when she sent him away, it was a crisis. It was a separation. They thought they couldn't even continue. But now when she realizes that they need to be separated, it's not, he doesn't read it as a sending away, like, a fight or a rift, but that, like, for whatever reason they need to be separated, she sends him to Hare Besamim. She realizes that the love and the relationship continues even when they are separated. It doesn't mean the fact that they're separated that it's over. It means that it's still stable, it's still a beautiful relationship, but it can't be, it's not fully actualized right now. And that's the mature, when we keep talking about the relationship maturing, that's the mature relationship, the relationship with the recognition that it's ongoing, even if there's a period of separation. And there's a beautiful point that actually Rav Yonatan Grossman made, which is that maybe it's actually because what we spoke about before, when we spoke about how she becomes more confident about herself and her own worthiness for this relationship, maybe it's at that point that she can also have confidence and belief in the relationship itself, even at the moment where there is a separation. So a few kind of final takeaways here about this parak, and I think it speaks to the sefer as a whole, is that first of all, relationships are not linear. Shir HaShirim is not at all linear, and our human relationships are not linear, and our relationships with Hashem are also not linear. They move, there are ups and downs, there are times of closeness, there are times of separation, there are times of longing, and there are times of real joy. But that's the nature of a real and intense relationship. And even though our relationships have ups and downs, the maturity of the relationship is to remember that it's still stable and it's there. And lastly, if you're listening to this on Erev Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur, one of the things we do is we acknowledge the ruptures in our relationship. We know that we're not perfect. We say all the al chetz. We recognize what's gone wrong in our relationship with Hashem. But we also say, actually my favorite piyut, my favorite poem is the one Ki Anu Amecha, when we say to Hashem, we are always your nation. The relationship is non-negotiable. And in that poem, two of the phrases that we say really stand out to me. First of all, we turn to Hashem, we say, Anu Karmecha, we are your vineyard, Va'atano Treinu, and you are the one that planted us, which, you know, brings up so many of these pieces from Shir HaShirim and the comparisons to the vineyard and the wine. And we also say, Anu Rayatecha Va'ata Dodenu. We are your Raya. We are the one that you are in love with. Va'ata Dodenu, and you are our beloved. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Rose Foreman, Rezel Rachel Bat Aryeh Leib, and Rachel Zeitlin, Rachel Bat Shlomo.